Good evening, everyone. Welcome back to the Pesky Report, episode 354, presented by Beyond the Monster. Happy Mother's Day to all the Mother's Day out there. Hope you all are having a tremendous day, and we thank you for stopping by on this special day to hang out with us. I'm Jordan, joined by Sam and Brian. How y'all doing tonight?
Great.
I didn't hear you that time. Yeah.
Oh, you're muted. Well, I can hear you, Jordan. So, and then I could.
Yeah. Oh,
you should be fine now, Sam, right?
Nope. Oh. Well, technical difficulties off the rip. Cannot hear you.
Nothing yet. Yeah.
Oh, I heard a noise. I heard a noise and then it cut out. Bear with us for a second. Sorry about this.
Maybe just check the plug or something. It seems like, yeah.
You are currently muted.
Keep unplugging and plugging. It's not
You're
working.
Good now. Yep.
You're okay. Good
now.
You're good.
You're good now. Yep. This was all calculated, everybody. We just wanted to see if we could keep your attention despite talking about nothing. Sam, how you doing tonight?
Good. How are y'all?
Doing all right. And it was a somewhat ugly series for the Red Sox, but they were able to take 2 out of 3. It was not pretty. We'll go through these games one by one. We talked about this on the weekday show. I was on with Kevin and Matt about how obvious Patrick Corbin shoving it down their throats would be in game one. Just so predictable. I was not expecting them to actually, play well against him. You could go back and check the receipts. Well, as bad as I am at calling home runs on the show, I'm very good at calling when shitters are going to dominate the Boston Red Sox. He went, 5 innings? Outpitched Tanner Houck, who's been one of the best pitchers in baseball this season. Yeah, 5 innings, 7 hits, 1 earned, walked 1, struck out 4. So that was just abysmal. I didn't watch most of that game, admittedly. The playoffs have been kind of taking precedent. Did y'all watch the game? And was it just as frustrating as it looked on the box score?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Losing your mic again. Yeah.
I don't know what's going on. I can hear you now.
Okay.
I don't know what's going on.
You know what? I'll refresh and I'll see if that helps.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good. We will bring Sam back in a moment. So yeah, Brian, was it just as frustrating on the box score as it was?
A lot of these games I don't get to watch, right when they happen. And I use the 360 app, and then I was like, do you want to watch it live? And I say yes, because then you can fast forward it. And I'm like, okay, all right. Tanner's doing okay. All right. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, come on. Who is this guy? And then I'm like, all right. Oh yeah, that's who Corbin. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it's like, and then I'm like, what is going on here? And then I'm sure we'll talk about it in a little bit, but the runners in scoring position, like, it's not like they don't get guys on. It's like guy in first and second. And then who's up? Hamilton's up or somebody. And you're like, come on. Like, if we just had a guy, I know Jordan and I were talking about earlier with the crazy lineup they had today with Durant at 8th. And he goes, well, yeah, I want something in the bottom of the lineup, but I don't want Durant 8th. He's like, give me a break. I'm like, well, it might happen, whatever. But the first game, it's like all these games they're losing, they're not like 2 or 3 years ago where, the bullpen is just blowing it and you have absolutely no chance. They're in all these games for a bit. And it seems like once they don't drive a few guys in, then they just not pack it in, but like those chances just dissolve. And of course, it's, if they have a lead, it's they'll blow it, like they used to back in the day in the 8th inning. And then, they play Sweet Caroline at the park and everybody goes bonkers, which is always great. That's like the worst thing. But they were in that first game for a bit. And Tanner, he's going to come back to earth at some point. I think that's kind of what we're seeing right now. I think he give up 3 runs in that game, I think. And then the bullpen gave up a few after or whatever. But he pitched well enough to win if you with a top 10 offense, with an offense that's 0 for 49 or whatever it feels like they are from runners in scoring position this last series or last 2 series, you're not going to get it done. So, you scored 1 run, but you wouldn't have had to shut the other team out to win. And that just didn't happen.
Yeah, Tanner Houck went 7 innings again. It's crazy how we've gone from, oh my God, he gave you 5. That's crazy to like, oh my God, he gave you five. That's horrible. So now it's like it's by reputation that you're expecting him to go, you know, at least I think the fewest amount of outs he's gotten in a game is 17, what, 5 2/3. So he's been tremendous. Wasn't his best version of himself the other night, but he still went 7, got the quality start. So Sam, we'll test out the mic. How frustrating was it for you to watch them lose to Patrick Corbin on Friday?
All right. I hope it's working now. Okay. It's incredibly frustrating because he's like been notoriously one of the worst starting pitchers over the past few years. And it was like you said, like you called it, it's just, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's a Pete Fatsy thing. I don't know if it's just like a regression to the mean, but it feels like every time we're up against a really shitty starting pitcher, they're going to shove. I don't know what has been happening the past few years, but it has absolutely been infuriating. But yeah, it was just, you know, we've seen this 100 times over the past couple of years. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, it's getting as problematic as possible when it comes to watching the Red Sox, especially with runners in scoring position. I have the numbers up here. They were 1 for 9. They were 1 for 9 in game 1 of the series with runners in scoring position. I believe the only person that drove in a run was Garrett Cooper. Yeah, Garrett Cooper had the one hit with a double that drove in a run. So, like, you know, this is what it's come to for, you know, the Boston Red Sox over the last few years with Pete Fatsy. And again, Matt, who's in the chat, who just told everyone that we need to fire Pete Fatsy into the moon. We talked about it this week. This isn't a problem that's just 2024 exclusive. And like some of it is talent. Like they have good hitters, but there's a lot of mixing and matching. There's a lot of guys that haven't been here. There's no continuity with the organization, let alone the lineup day to day. But on top of it, like it just feels like every single day. I tweeted this during the game. I can't remember the last time they had someone in scoring position with less than 2 outs, and I was even like moderately confident that they were going to score. And that it's a problem. It's like 3 years old at this point, and game 1 was no different. Kenley gave up a couple runs in the 9th inning. I think it was his first outing in a while, which is crazy because then he pitched every game in the series. We'll get into Kenley a little bit more in a bit. I mean, it was nice to see Hout go 7 innings again. Garrett Cooper seems to be coming alive a little bit. It hit 2 hits today. Again, we'll talk about the game today in a little bit, but maybe they're not as hopeless at first base as I thought, you know, earlier in the week. I still cannot stand Dom Smith being on my team. 4 or 5 years ago, I would have been okay with it. But right now, no, I'm good. Any last thoughts on game 1 before we get into talking about the Red Sox actually winning games?
I don't have any more to say about it. I mean, I just want to move on from that game and talk about the games they did win.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So in game 2 on Saturday, the Red Sox ended up winning that one 4-2. They did finally have a timely hit with runners in scoring position. They only had 6 at bats with runners in scoring position and were 2 for 6. So it was a much better look with runners in scoring position. Obviously the big hit came late. Raffy Devers, the 2-run double off of a lefty, which was, you know, I've been waiting for him to do something clutch. It's been so long, especially at Fenway. Like he hit a double today and he hit the double yesterday, but entering play yesterday, he was hitting .231 at Fenway with a slugging percentage of .282. Like you want to defend your home field better, your best player needs to be hitting at home. So they'll go as far as he goes at Fenway Park. Cause like Brian said earlier, they're not losing these games in blowout fashion where like, oh, Devers has a huge game, it doesn't matter. Like he plays like he's capable of. They have a really good shot at winning each game, at least so far with the way the pitching's been. Sam, I'll let you run with it there. What were your thoughts on game 2?
It has been bizarre, like how much of a revelation Cooper Criswell really has been over the past couple of weeks. I mean, going into it, I fully was like making fun of the signing because it felt like one of those ones like it's just like a random out of nowhere like DFA in like 2 weeks kind of move. And then it's like he genuinely is one of the key parts of the rotation at this point. I can't imagine like we would have Josh Winkowski instead, who I mean we'll talk about that later, but like I really can't think who else would be starting if not Cooper Criswell, and he's flourished. It's just truly like another Andrew Bailey masterclass, really.
Yeah, Cooper Criswell's been awesome. Brian, any thoughts on Criswell?
Yeah, I mean, the same thing that Sam said. It's like, you know, a lot of these guys, and I think the last show I did, you, Jordan, we were talking about it, where a lot of guys are really stepping up, and it's because of opportunity. And, you know, we had at least I thought a really good start considering what we thought this team was going to be pitching-wise. And, you know, we're leading the league and everything, but Pivetta goes down. Bayo goes down. Whitlock has been down. You're like, okay, it's starting to sound like, you know, Worcester's going to be, you know, we're going to see some Grant Campbell starts. it's gonna get ugly now. You know, Dick Fitz is gonna be here soon, and that didn't happen. And these guys, so you know, if you're, you know, a pitcher, you know, and you're not, you know, you weren't gonna be one of the five going in, and you can give them five innings, the guy had nine strikeouts. You know, I mean, it's a competitive start. It's not, you're not treading water. It's not, you know, well, I'll hold them to three or four, and they'll have a chance. It's like you go in and you almost expect to, like, you know, if I, you know, I have tickets to these games. If I give somebody the tickets to a game and he's pitching, I don't feel like, oh, I'm really sorry, you know, you get that game. It's like, no, like, you're going to have a good time with this game. They, you know, they might win. They get a really good shot. But now you get all these guys coming back. So it's a good problem to have when you have too much starting pitching. Because your middle relief is usually the guys that can't cut it. And those are the guys that blow the leads or don't hold the leads. And if you can kind of get rid of those scrubs off your team, off your roster, things are going to get a lot better really soon.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, he wasn't the only mustached individual making a start yesterday on Saturday. Paul Skeens also debuted. We'll talk more about that debut later. But, you know, Matt dropped this comment. I definitely thought we needed to mention that he did, and in fact, outpitch Paul Skeens. But, you know, the media doesn't want you to know that because there's an agenda that, you know, throw ball hard, you better. Cooper Criswell throws 88 and he's got like a 1.19 ERA this year. I saw former Red Sox pitcher Joel Pinheiro tweeted this morning that velocity is not everything. That's why it's called pitching and not throwing. And I think he may have watched the highlights on Mr. Cooper Criswell pitch yesterday, because that is real ball right there. 88, oh, yeah. But you're still getting those punch outs. He's been a godsend. And like, we mocked the signing all offseason mostly because, you know, Red Sox ownership put their foot in their mouths, you know, talking about going full throttle. And then here's Cooper Criswell, you know, but he's been very, very impressive. And I couldn't back the hype that was there, you know, after about halfway through spring training when he had like a 2-something ERA. I'm like, he throws 84 miles an hour, 85 miles an hour on his cutter. Like, I just can't get behind that, but it's working so far. And I would love to see him against like a really, really good lineup. I know he pitched well against the Twins, but like, I would love to see how he does against the Yankees or, you know, just a team like that. I would have loved to have seen how he would have fared against Atlanta. But now in hindsight, probably a good thing he didn't, because then
we still have this conversation. I'm good with that.
could he have been worse than Pivetta, giving up what, 5-4, whatever he did? Like,
oh, man.
Yeah, he wasn't great. But yeah, Cooper Criswell's been awesome. No complaints there. And the thing for me, and his ERA is 2.1. So I pencil whipped him in favor of him. He's garbage. 2.1 ERA. ERA is over 2 at this point in the season. Come on, though. Cutter Crawford is my ace. But, yeah. The one thing, I know I've kind of been going off on a tangent here, but the one thing about Criswell and just the rotation in general is it makes me feel more confident going forward into off seasons that these kind of, not necessarily reclamation projects, but pitchers who have really good stuff, like, they're going to start wanting to come to Boston as long as Andrew Bailey's here, because, oh, look at what he was able to do with Cooper Criswell. Look what he was able to do with Nick Pivetta. Look what he was able to do with Cutter Crawford. And like, Hauk is like the big example now, because all of a sudden he could pitch deep into games. You know, would have loved to have seen what he could have done with Giolito. Obviously, you know, his elbow had other plans, but you know, moving forward, this might become a place where, you know, that second tier of pitching really wants to go to, or even the first tier wants to, if they want to go to that, you know, get to that next level, which is nice, because this place, nobody wanted to play for Dave Bush. Any more thoughts on this game? I know we haven't really talked about Devers' big swing, which is, thank God. I would have lost my mind if it had to go and walk off yesterday after losing to Patrick Corbin. But y'all got anything left on game two?
Do you think Martin is back now? Or is he, like, I went to a couple games where he just looked like complete dog shit. And then it's like, oh, he's his arm, blah, blah, blah. And the whole thing, he didn't pitch like in spring training. And then, but, you know, he pitched pretty good, I guess, today and yesterday. So is he back in the trust tree? Is he okay? Or is he on thin ice? What's going on with him?
Honestly, Sam, what do you think?
He looked excellent today in comparison to some of the shit that he's had. But his ERA is still over four despite the past couple scoreless outings. So it's I don't want to say he's fully back, but he's definitely trending in the right direction.
Yeah, and I would agree there. I mean, he did also almost die in game two, which was that CJ Abrams wicked line drive. Chris Martin makes some of the craziest plays given his size that I could like imagine a pitcher making. Like, he dropped like a box, like a freaking sack of potatoes, and caught that line drive right back at him from CJ Abrams, who's having an awesome year. They were able to kind of keep him down. I don't think he had any extra base hits in the series. He had, you know, a handful of hits, but got caught stealing once, you know, and everything was all singles from him. So they were able to kind of keep him down. He's having a breakout campaign, but yeah, Chris Martin, I definitely feel more comfortable with him today than I did a week or so ago. But I wonder if he's just one of those guys that, like, the first month of the season, he kind of teeters on average, and then he kind of picks it up as it gets warmer out. Like, he's had this shoulder issue this year, and last year he went on the IL with like a, I don't remember what it was, he had like a neck issue. He was out for, you know, like 3 weeks or so, and then came back and then allowed like one run the rest of the season. Expecting him to do that again is not fair, but I do wonder if maybe at this stage in his career, April is like his real spring training, and then he kind of picks up. I mean, we're in May now, but, you know,
I know he didn't really have a spring training. It seemed like he didn't pitch hardly at all. So maybe you're right, this is a spring training, but I just remember last year him being so dominant, and I hate it when I go to a game and a guy who was ridiculous just you know, pukes on his own shoes and blows a game in a mat, and it's like, well, this is going to be a fun walk back to the car. All right, thanks a lot, Chris Martin, you know? And then, you know, sometimes you're lucky enough to, like, see him, and, you know, they're 6'5", 6'6", and they're towering over. You're like, you pitch great, man. I'm not bad at all, you know? You know, you're like, oh, if I see that guy, and then they walk out the you have the same entrance, you're like, Shut up. But sometimes you run into him, and all of a sudden, oh, you were great.
Oh, yeah, you were awesome. Yeah. You're like, it's on site if I see you in the parking lot. Then you see them in the parking lot, you're like, oh, fuck, you'd kick my ass. Never mind. Never mind. Good job. Yeah. It's that's okay. Right. Get him next time, Chris. Kenley Jansen pitched the ninth inning, had a 1-2-3 inning with two strikeouts for his, I think, sixth save of the year. Yeah, sixth save of the year and seven tries at that point. It was like the first time this season he's pitched 2 days in a row. Only like the third time or fourth time in his Red Sox career he's pitched 2 days in a row, or two games in a row for that matter. I remember he did pitch both ends of a doubleheader at one point last season. I don't know if that factors in to pitching 2 days in a row. I still can't believe Cora did that, but it's 2024 now. I'll try to get over it. But yeah, Kenley looked really good in game two. He's starting to look really good again. And like we mocked him, or I definitely did, about being looking a little thick. You know, he's always been a big dude, but he got a little bit bigger. It looked, and maybe that's, you know, partially the new uniforms, but he looked much bigger, you know, and obviously was full of excuses during the spring training, and literally. I know it was hurt. Yeah, he was full of excuses. He filled up on excuses, and that's why he got so big.
Have you ever seen that spread, Jordan? I think you might have a few times in their locker room. There's no shortage of, you know, the Popeye's closed, but there's plenty of other good options nearby.
He's been awesome lately. The velocity's starting to creep back up, and you know, he's been making himself much more available lately, which he wasn't doing early in the season. They had a lot of, you know, the issue with him sleeping funny in Seattle. They had to have Joely Rodriguez close the game. Hopefully, obviously, you never know when he's going to sleep funny, but hopefully that doesn't happen again, and we can, you know, enjoy the, however much time we have left of Kenley Jansen in Boston, because I still do not think he will be here on August 1st. But who, anybody have any thoughts on Kenley from yesterday?
I think it's funny that Red Sox stats tweeted out like Kenley Jansen's going to be the freshest arm available at the deadline. He hasn't gone back to back all year. And then he goes 3 days in a row. that was perfect timing.
Perfect timing. Yeah. I mean, like they treated this series with Washington like it was the fucking playoffs. They were like, oh shit, we're down 3-2 in the series. We got to win these last two. So Kenley's available. Chris Martin's available. I think Martin pitched in two of the three. But yeah, they were. Kenley was not available at all, or not used at all, and then now he's every day. And now tomorrow they got their first division rival game in almost a month, and they don't have their closer or probably their setup man, so that should be fun, especially the Rays voodoo magic late in games. I'm definitely not going to be tweeting things that get flagged on Twitter for violating protocol or whatever they call it, community guidelines.
You never know, Jordan. You never know with those guys, you know? I mean, it could be the craziest thing. You know, they like to flag you to flag you, you know?
Yeah, dude, I can't stand the Rays. Like, I really can't. Like, I obviously hate the Yankees more than any other team as a Red Sox fan, because, like, you legally cannot hate another team more, but oh my lord, are the Rays close.
Like, I'm really happy the Astros are sucking right now. I mean, I'm loving that.
Yeah, I'm definitely not losing any sleep over that, but
they were so smug for years, Jordan, like coming in, showing up, that whole first base section, they'd like just pack it with their orange jerseys, and they'd be like, oh yeah, you know, we win every year, we lose, this guy, it doesn't matter, you know, blah, 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 you know, you guys are, and I'm like, all right, and just, I got sick every single year. They would just be like an infestation. There's always fans from other teams. But Houston is just like they jam up all the legal seafoods in the area. They jam up all the hotels in the area. They just feel like, oh, can you smell that? Like, that's the Astros fans. They're here. They're everywhere. Like, every single game. It's awful.
I wonder how many of them would have known who John Singleton was in 2022, considering he was there before they became good. Like, he was there in like 13 and 14, those last few years of the tank. How many of those Astros fans are OG enough to remember John Singleton before, you know, he got like reinstated in baseball? And
I think it's the same amount that when they go to South Beach and they still think Shaq's on the Heat. It's like, can you name one player on the Miami Heat? They're like Dwayne Wade?
The Dodgers fans looking for JD Drew and Jeff Kent out there, because they haven't been to a ball game in a decade, or they're still trying to make it there for the end of the game that was in like August of 2008, because they never show up on time.
They're in traffic still. If you've been to LA, they're in traffic.
I've been to LA once, and like, I definitely have a newfound appreciation for Dodgers fans who show up before the end of the fifth inning, because that is a nightmare to travel in. It's horrible. Never want to go back there ever again. Nope. Unless I'm forced, I will not. So we'll move on to game three, the game that wrapped up about 3-ish hours ago. Red Sox win that one 3-2, and this game was fun. Not because it didn't take years off my life, because it did. But that second inning was just pure comedy. Like, I know a lot of people were tweeting about how funny the roast of Tom Brady was this week. This was much funnier, in my opinion. Just the quality of baseball, or lack thereof, in the bottom of the second inning. Brian, what were your thoughts on that second inning? That was just insane to me.
Well, I mean, is it a new low? Like, what's the bar now? You know, like, at what point are you not surprised? When are you like, oh, I've seen this before? Or at what point, like, what is it? Like, how low does it go? Like, at what point are we like, oh, well, you know, at least they got an out, or at least they did this, or at least, where does it end? Where does it begin? I don't even know, you know? I just don't. I listened to the game on the radio the first half of it. I'm like, that didn't happen? Did it really happen? So now you guys saw the game probably in person. Like, or not in person, but, you know, on television or whatever. But explain to me, for people listening on the radio, like, did that really happen? Or was that just, you know, Will Fleming kind of painting a picture, and, you know, Lou Maloney just going off on a tangent? What happened?
It was wild. Sam, you want to take the reins on that?
Yeah, it was just like one of the weirdest things that could have happened. happened throughout the entire inning. Okay. And it was like, if you had scripted it, I would have been like, come on, you can't right. do all of this in one inning. You got to spread it out yeah. a little bit. There's yeah. no way all this yeah. weird stuff's happening all at once. It just is like, for Robles, I think that was the craziest thing. Robles is like an elite defensive outfielder. For him to just pivot was crazy. I mean, that loss of the game, ultimately. It was truly bizarre. Truly bizarre.
Yeah, and we were talking about this earlier about, you know, the lack of confidence that we have when the Red Sox have somebody in scoring position, especially when they get there with less than two outs. Wong walks to lead off the inning, and then Garrett Cooper hits a rocket, and they first and second nobody out, and I'm like in a bunch of Red Sox group chats, and they're like, all right, how the fuck are they going to ruin this opportunity? And then Vaughn Grissom hits a mile-high pop fly, and I'm like, all right, so this is going to get caught. Then we got the double play. And that'll be it, even though Duran was following him. And yeah, I like looked down to see, you know, everybody raging in my group chat about Grissom popping out. And it's just full of LMAO text in all caps. So that drops in. Then Duran hits that little dribbler in front of the plate, which I think Wong would have been safe on if Mackenzie Gore didn't like run directly in front of him. I think it's only not interference because Wong slowed down. Like he didn't make contact with him. Obviously, right. I think, you know, your instincts, you don't want to be in a head-on collision, especially when you're going in two separate directions. You just don't want to be in a collision like that. Anyway, that would have been a nasty spill. But I think Wong would have been safe had he not slowed down and just ran right through him. So then I'm like, all right.
Yeah, Rafael hits a double though, right? But it was a ground rule double. Is that what happened?
Yeah, it was also the okay. grossest swing of all time.
Scorched.
Well, yes.
Scorched.
He pissed on it. You got to get a drug test him after a swing like that. It was a mile-high pop fly that they were talking on the TV broadcast about how they think the wind kept it fair. It went like 190 feet. It was the expected batting average on it was 140, and it drops in and then goes, you know, out of play for a ground rule double, which was insane. Then Mackenzie Gore throws a wild pitch, which I think I still think Romy Gonzalez made contact with that swing on that swing. It sounded like it did. It must've hit home plate or something, because it sounded like it caught the bat. Wild pitch scores a run, you know, then Romy strikes out and Rob Refsnyder lines out. But, right. you know, it's, three it's runs just, unearned.
Wild that was a wild pitch, because they like, if he just puts the glove down or like blocks a little bit better, that's it's completely on the catcher. I don't know. Yeah. I know it's like a weird scorekeeping thing to see what's determined, but like that felt clear as day catcher's fault to me.
Yeah.
Is it three errors in one inning now, guys? Was it three errors in one inning?
It was only two. They only got hit with two. So I mean two of those runs being earned to Mackenzie Gore. Like, I apologize, bro. Like, that's not – like, your ERA. The Nationals are going to use the shit out of that in your arbitration hearing. I'm sorry. Like, that was some bad baseball. And then it, like, trickled into the top of the third because Victor Robles was a man possessed for about 25 minutes, and he hit that little dribbler to Devers, was running basically in parallel to the pitcher's mound to first base, then cuts back in, slams into Garrett Cooper's hand, like wrecks his wrist. I'm amazed he's still alive because Red Sox are cursed. And then the base hit by, I know I'm like telling yeah. this, so, but like CJ Abrams hits a single. Riley Adams, who is a very slow running catcher, stops at third. O'Neill throws home. And then Victor Robles is like, fuck it, I'll go to third base, I guess. And there's never no reason. Then he gets, you know, tagged out in a rundown, and he just ruined the inning, like completely. Like the Nationals would have had bases loaded and one out, but instead Victor Robles was like, "Let's fucking go! I'm gonna go run to third and get tagged out because I'm insane." He like quite literally lost the Nationals the game today.
Oh, definitely, definitely, yeah.
I am amazed, you know, because Davey Martinez is kind of like a. Much, which is weird because he was a disciple of Joe Maddon, is like a very old school style manager, and he's with a very old school style organization like the Nationals. I am amazed Victor Robles was allowed to keep playing after that base running blunder. He ruined the inning for them. He ruined the inning for them.
They're so strapped for talent though, Jordan. I think they're at the point where they can't really, you know, pick and choose anymore. I mean, they're not what they used to be by any stretch. So, I mean, I think the talent outweighs the stupidity, I guess you could say it. But, like, I'm reading the box score now. It's crazy. It was, you know, what inning were you talking? Oh, yeah. Grissom safe fielding error by center fielder Robles. Cooper safe at second on error. Wong safe at – it's like this is a little league home run. I mean, what's going on here?
Yeah, it was like a circus for like a good 25 minutes. The game ended up not being as ridiculous after the top of the third, but the level of crazy that we saw in the bottom of the second and top of the third kind of made the whole game worth it. It ended up only being a 3-2 game. You know, the Red Sox scored their three in the most ridiculous fashion in the bottom of the second. The Nationals got two back on a two-run home run from Eddie Rosario, which I don't know if you were watching at that point, Brian, but Seydon Rafaela almost made the most ridiculous catch of the season.
So was the ball in his glove and then he dropped it, or because he ran into the bullpen and then on the radio they said he made contact with it. When I watched the replay on the DVR, did he touch it?
It hit off the end of his glove.
He hit the end of his glove. Okay.
Yeah,
so, I think that's why he's in center field versus, you know, I know he's probably, what, an inch shorter, a couple inches shorter than Duran, but maybe does Duran make that play? But if anybody makes that play, it's like one in like a billion, right? I mean, play of the year, maybe, probably.
Yeah, I really, it definitely would have been, at least to this point, you know, the catch he would have made. It reminded me a lot of, you know, was it 2017, the Austin Jackson leaping catch? It was basically in the same spot to rob Hanley Ramirez. I think it was either 16 or 17 that he hit that, or that play happened. But it reminded me a lot of that. But the result ended up being a lot more like 2013 Torii Hunter, where I thought he got hurt on the play too, which would have been just devastating because he's starting to kind of come around a little bit with the bat, and you know, they just can't afford to have more people get hurt, you know, especially position players.
We don't want to talk about that. If he's done, I mean, they're screwed at two positions, not one.
Yeah, welcome back Dalton Guthrie to Major League Baseball, I guess. Or maybe Chase Meidroth would have finally gotten an opportunity. I have no idea. But, would have been a crazy catch. I'm more glad that he just didn't hurt himself. Yeah, I mean, like it's nice to have somebody that I feel super confident in making plays like that. Like I had, like even as good as Kike was, like I wouldn't have expected him to make a play like that. Jackie Bradley obviously would have expected him to make a play like that because he did it. It felt like almost like once or twice a week,
right?
But Seydon is getting into that tier very quickly, which is crazy because like his underlying metrics defensively, he's not been great. But I think it's because of like very routine plays that he, like his fuck ups have been on very, very, very routine plays. Which is
probably usually the savants, they're like that, Jordan. I mean, the guys that are otherworldly, you know, they make dumb mistakes because they almost get lazy or they like, you know, they kind of like are daydreaming because the things they can do, like we never, ever could do like in real life. I mean, they're like almost like, you know, like if a guy's on a breakaway, like the Celtics do it, if they're on a breakaway, they almost like, and they blow it, but like if it's a degree of difficulty where it's very difficult, they you know, 9 times out of 10 they nail it. And I think for Rafael, I think that's just a majority thing. It's the same reason he swings the pitches over his head or, you know, on the dirt. You know, in AAA, AA, you can squeak those over a second baseman's head or, you know, get a single and he can use his speed. He's gonna learn eventually that you can't do that. And it's just a discipline thing. I don't know if we need a cattle prod or a taser on him or something, but I mean, we can condition him in the off season to make sure that he just doesn't swing at stuff that he's not gonna get at least a hit 25% of the time. It's doable because he's a freak athlete. He's amazing to watch. Like the guys that do the minor league show, I mean, they can tell you every single game he would do something ridiculous defensively. And we're gonna see that at the major league level. And I think that people are starting to see that, you know.
Yeah.
Even when he was a shortstop in the low minors, the like normal routine play was always his like kryptonite. It's like been a long-standing issue for him. I really don't know like if it's a mental block or it's just like something like that, but it's been an issue with him for years now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like Brian said, I do wonder how much of it is like when you have to make a difficult play, like you don't have time to think about it. It's just all natural ability. It just comes instinctively. And like Devers is another example of that. He's not a freak athlete like Rafaela is, but we talk about it, how if Devers had to make a, you know, full extension diving play on the backhand, you know, in deep foul territory and throw it from his ass on a late, on a string to the first baseman's chest, he's making that play. Ground ball right to him. He may not field it, but if he does, he's sending that throw into like the luxury suites, because like, that's just kind of the player Devers has become. I mean, he's been a much better defender of late. But yeah, like it's crazy that the Red Sox have so many guys, which is another big reason why it sucked when Trevor Story went down, because he's one of those guys that makes all those crazy plays, but there was a calm about him when the ball was just hit to him and he just, you knew he was going to field it. Obviously errors happen. And he made a couple of them during his very brief 2024, mm-hmm. but you know, ball was hit at him. You knew the play was very likely going to get made. And like, weirdly enough, Bobby Dalbec was very similar to that this year, even though he historically has been horrible defensively on top of just everything else. But yeah, getting late into the game, you know, Bayo made his first start in about a month with his, he had lat tightness after the Pittsburgh game, which I thought was his best start of the season after he went exclusively from the stretch. Had one rehab start and then came back, 5 innings, 4 hits, 2 earned, 2 walks, 1 strikeout. I thought he looked rusty. He didn't look like he was necessarily fully ready to be pitching in a major league game. Now, that says something to how good he is, and really maybe a little bit more about the, you know, the state of the Nationals, even though they've been kind of like a surprise decent team this year. He only gave up those 2 runs and it was on the 1 swing from Eddie Rosario. So what did you think today, Sam, of Bayo's performance?
I agree. It was rusty. He just didn't really have the full control. It really felt like he had a, like, concerning lack of command in full count situations and 3-ball situations. It felt every other winning an inning, he would walk one and then maybe allow a hit. And that kept getting him in trouble, especially like we've been talking about with the diminished defense. I even the past 2 years, he's been a really heavy sinker baller guy, and he's had some level of walks, like not like a concerning amount. But this year it's felt like he hasn't gotten to his stride where he's not walking like half the time. But I think that really that's the next thing that they need to focus on. Get the walks way, way down. Because especially this year, he's been a little bit more homer prone. It's a concerning like combination that's happening in behind the scenes. I know Bailey and them are like really going to focus on that behind the scenes to get that fixed.
Yeah. Brian, what were your thoughts on Bayo today?
I was watching the game and I looked at some of the stats. He's only got 3 pitches, you know, instead of some guys have 4 or 5. He basically doesn't throw his 4-seam at all anymore. I don't know if he threw a cutter today, but he's got, you know, the 4-seamer kind of is a binky thing where he can get over for a strike. And the problem is it's like, you know, he's not doing that anymore. So he's have to rely on his 2-seamer, which is most popular pitch. The problem is sometimes he doesn't know where it's going. And you're right, the walks do kill him because he gave up the walk, you know, and then he gives up the 2-run home run. If he gets that guy out, you know, maybe he gets another inning. But yeah, if he doesn't nail down the walks, that's going to be a big problem with him, because I think people are going to be sitting on pitches at certain points. But I mean, he's still a very, very young guy, you know, and I think for how he's pitching, I think he's pitched great, you know. And is the Nationals like a rehab start because of the Nationals? Maybe.
Maybe.
You know, and would I rather him pitch up here? And I mean, I've had the chance to talk to some of these guys, you know, just, you know, in the past, and they'll tell you, you can have a rehab start, but when there's 5,000 people there, you know, I mean, yeah, you're getting your work in, but it's an adrenaline thing. You know, people go, oh, they're only throwing 94, 95. And then all of a sudden in a major league game, like, especially like a guy, like a closer, then they're throwing 100. It's all adrenaline. They're adrenaline junkies. They're like wrestlers. They hear that pop of the crowd and they just go nuts. And they're in a bubble for like a good, like 15, you know, minutes, or if they're a starter, a couple hours. And then, you know, it's like, don't talk to Chris Sale when he's starting, or don't talk to Pedro Martinez. And then the day they're not starting, they're completely different people. And that's how a lot of these guys function. I mean, I can't tell you how many starting pitchers I see at Fenway. They will not start warming up until the clock hits a certain number every single time. And then as soon as it goes to 22 or 20, then they'll start. They're all creatures of habit. They're some of the most superstitious guys in the world. And a rehab start in Altoona is one thing, but, you know, pitching in a major league game, that's going to get you ready. And I think that, you know, it was time. And he's so young, too. I mean, why not, you know? It's not like we're going to get into Garrett Cole later on. It's not like he's throwing 89.
You know? Yeah, for sure. I think Bayo's start today was very reminiscent of his start against Seattle on opening day. Just looked like he was one start away from looking good. And he got lit up his second time out against Oakland, but, you know. He looked a little bit rusty, and it's nice that he was able to kind of settle down, and Cora sent him back out for the fifth after he gave up the home run in the fourth. And, you know, he had a scoreless frame. His ERA now is the worst in the rotation still at 3.13, which is just, it's probably Pivetta probably is the worst now, actually, now that I think about it, because he only made three starts. But, you know, among guys who've made at least four starts, worst ERA in the staff of 3.13. So you know, can't really complain with that. Complain about that. I know a lot of people are like waiting for him to have like a big strikeout outing, and I know he had like 8 against LA. I think he had 7 against the Pirates. I don't know why people are so keen on him. I know he had he was a big strikeout guy in the minor leagues, but like again, when I watch Bayo pitch, I see so much Sandy Alcantara in him, and like Alcantara, because he gets a shit ton of ground balls. And, you know, the first couple of years in the league, they were pretty similar in the sense that they gave you innings. They didn't necessarily strike out a bunch of guys. They walked, you know, probably an average amount of guys, but they were still able to get you deep in games. And I still feel that way about Bayo. He'll be the kind of guy who gets like 8 strikeouts per 9, but he will never have 8 strikeouts in a game. It'll be like he'll have a 10 strikeout game, but then he'll have like a 3 strikeout game where he pitches into the 8th inning. Like, that's the kind of pitcher I view Bayo as. Like, I don't want people to, like, if he's chasing whiffs, which like so many people are like, oh, he can't get any swings and misses. Like, if he's chasing whiffs, then he may be a little bit more erratic with his command. I want him to just to steal the saying we've been hearing so much this season. I want him to be relentless in the strike zone. Like, just throw a bunch of strikes. You'll get your whiffs, you know, here and there. They'll come naturally, but like, the Red Sox want to get length out of him. He's the, you know, going to be the guy in the rotation beyond 2024. They want innings out of him. If he's chasing whiffs and his command is shit because of it, I'm not necessarily a fan of that. Let me get 6-7 innings out of him every single time out. And, you know, if he strikes out 10 or he strikes out 4, I don't care. Get me into the 6th or 7th inning. That's where I'm at with him. Maybe it's not the most apt comparison, him and Alcantara, but I do see it a lot. Alcantara was a big ground ball guy early in his career. Bayo's become a lot more homer prone of late, which is a little bit concerning, because last year he gave up, it felt like one every single time out. He's become a little bit too much like Pivetta for my liking, but you know, it is what it is. Any last thoughts on Bayo or, you know, the team in general before we get into Kenley making his third appearance in a row? Yep. Nothing on Bayo. All right. So Kenley made his third straight appearance. You know, his first outing of the series wasn't a safe situation. It was more of like, let's get some work in, because you've pitched like once in the last 3 weeks. You know, got the save yesterday and then was back out for a save situation today. I was fully expecting that to go horribly wrong. Especially when he comes out and his first, you know, like 3 cutters were like 88, 89 miles an hour. I thought he looked all right. The command was a little bit shaky, but again, it was his third day in a row pitching. Not expecting him to be the sharpest, you know, out there from a stuff standpoint. He did strike out, or would have been, should have been a strikeout. I don't remember who the number 2 hitter was. I think it was Nick Senzel. He dotted him 96 at the bottom of the zone. I was like, whoa, where the fuck did that come from, Kenley? 96 on day 3 in a row. He dotted him. It was called a ball. Ended up walking him. Or no, I gave up a single to him. And then, you know, Connor Wong was the hero. But, you know, any little bit of reaction on Kenley's third day in a row, plus, you know, Connor Wong being a hero. I'll start with you, Sam.
I just cannot. It feels exactly like the doubleheader from last year. Like, I really could not believe he actually pitched 3 days in a row. At this point, keep him rolling. He hasn't gotten an earned run yet. Just let it roll.
welcome. Kenley is going to pitch tomorrow too. God damn it. Let's
let him start.
Let him start the game. Let him start. Oh my gosh. Could you imagine, you know, after all these years, Kenley just is just starting a damn game. Gives you like four innings.
Isn't he the emergency catcher too? Right.
He's got to be, right? They don't have, it's probably like Romy Gonzalez if we're being serious now that he's back. But no. Yeah, those like that like week where it was like, oh god, if this had to happen, who would it be? God, could you imagine? Yeah, imagine Kenley at 37 after not squatting since 2009, fucking getting down and catching.
He might not get back up.
He might not. You want to talk about his back issues? Sleeping funny. How about fucking being awake funny? Like, that'd be crazy. Thinking of Kenley, he might be the best hitter on the team with runners in scoring position, though. So we'll, who knows? We may have to give him some burn.
He'd be the only switch hitter in the lineup, too.
He would be. Alex Cora loves those matchups, man. Like, he can't wait for Tyler Heineman to come back either, because then he can use him every day and in just a gross fashion. He'll find a way to get Tyler Heineman some at bats. But yeah. Kenley and Tyler Heineman hitting back to back in the lineup. That'd be crazy. But yeah, Connor Wong. I felt like so far this season, Connor Wong has not been the Connor Wong of 2023 on both sides of the ball. Obviously, he's been a much better hitter, but he wasn't throwing guys out, it felt like, at the rate that he typically does. I mean, he was crazy last year from a caught stealing perspective. They gunned down three people. One was aided by a replay in the first inning. Obviously had another caught down another base runner trying to advance on a ball in the dirt in the second inning. And then he caught I don't think it was Nick Senzel. I think Jacob Young pinch ran for him, but he cut him down to end up winning the game. So even though Connor Wong went 0-for-3 with a walk today, he had his fingerprints all over this one. And it shows to the growth of him as a player. Like, he's not, I think the one thing we could count on him for last year was controlling the running game. This year, he's become a lot more of a focal point of the offense. And then now, but it's nice to see that on a day he doesn't hit, he doesn't hit the ball hard. He doesn't put up really any good at bats. I think his one walk was like a 5-pitch at bat. It was just nothing was really competitive, but him being able to lock in and control the running game in a game that was hideous, 3-2, you got to keep him out of scoring position, especially with Kenley pitching 3 days in a row, you know, came through in the clutch. He will definitely be the thumbnail photo. I just have to find the right picture for him because we love Connor Wong here. This is a Connor Wong podcast. I don't know if y'all love Connor Wong, but I love Connor Wong and I overrule. So, any thoughts on Wong today?
He is the focal point of the Mookie Betts trade, right? At this point, I mean,
yeah. It is. It is. It's the Connor Wong trade.
Yeah. It is kind of wild that he was kind of a throw-in after like the Bruce Dark Gratterall stuff failed. It wasn't supposed to be him originally, I don't think.
No. Right?
So yeah, that's, I mean, stroke of luck, because Bruce Dark Gratterall is not a better player than Connor Wong.
No, he's not. And that's another thing about Wong is so many people, like, I don't think he's going to be, you know, like a great hitter at the major league level, but like, unless you're a generational talent at catcher, like, it's not uncommon for guys to not pop offensively till they're like 27, 28, 29. I mean, Jonah Heim was a cast off from the Oakland A's after 2020. He was last year was his age 28 season. He was an all-star. Not saying Connor Wong will have that same trajectory, but like, if Jonah Heim can pop in his late 20s, like, why can't Connor Wong, especially playing at Fenway, you know, that he's got a swing that's kind of built for it, as long as he's making an adequate amount of contact, which he has so far, thankfully. Mm-hmm. And he's like one of the only dudes I trust in scoring position right now. It's like him, Duran, and like Devers against righties, even though he got that big hit in game two off of a lefty. I just don't trust him against anybody else.
How about Jordan today with the ball that O'Neill hit where he fouled it and he hit it out and then he struck out on the next pitch? I'm like, if he hit that ball out confidence wise for him, and everybody just went and got off his back for like a minute, and he struck out, and I think it was like on like a breaking ball, and then I think that was just like third strikeout of the game. I'm like, come on, you know, like, don't get me wrong, I love watching the guy hit. He's a complete meathead. I love watching the guy at the plate, but I'm like, I want it, like, come on, hit the ball fair, hit the ball fair. And I guess it was only maybe like what, a foot foul, if that.
Yeah, it was barely foul. I feel for Tyler O'Neal. Like, he's been, like, he was so locked in the first, like, 2 weeks of the season. And I'm not saying there's any kind of connection between, you know, him getting concussed and him suddenly not hitting the ball very well anymore, because he did have a few good games, you know, after coming back. I mean, it's a cruel game. Like, he was going to regress. He wasn't going to hit 370 with an OPS of 2000 for the year. Like, I'm sorry, he's not Barry Bonds. Might be built like him, but he's not Barry Bonds.
When do they do the drug testing this year? We gotta know before. So we got a few guys that might be questionable. You heard anything?
Day after. Day after the piss test, started popping CDs again. But yeah, I mean, like, a lot of people are being very, you know, cruel to Tyler O'Neal. Like, mostly like people I've seen, you know, it's random Twitter accounts, but like hating on the guy, talking about how bad he is. They can't wait till he's not on the team anymore. And like, he's been horrible this year with runners on base, period. He's been a demigod typically with the bases empty. But like, you know, he was just the best hitter on the planet for 2 weeks. Like, I can deal with a little skid, especially after the dude got concussed. You just hear it, or you feel it a lot more when you're also missing Casas and Yoshida and, you know, all those guys. So he'll figure it out soon. I'm not necessarily worried. I do think, though, if the Red Sox are still kind of hovering around 500, if he gets scorching hot again, they might be a little bit more aggressive in trying to trade him before he hits another snag. You want somebody to get somebody that's playing well and not somebody that's ice cold, because that'll just kill the value of them. And like last year, everyone was on Chaim Bloom's ass for not trading James Paxton, but Paxton had looked horrible for about five straight starts. And like the trade market for him, I imagine, was not very good. And the alternative is, well, you're kind of in the race still. Maybe he'll figure it out. I think that's kind of where they, you know, kind of leaned into, and that didn't happen. I don't think that'll happen with O'Neal. I think they're definitely going to trade him, though. Anywho. So, yeah, any last thoughts on this series before we move into the corresponding move for Brian Baio returning to the roster? All right. So, yeah, Josh Winkowski got sent down. Kind of thought he'd be for Whitlock. Thought they would have gone with somebody else for Baio, and then Whitlock would have been the difficult choice. There's some serious balls there that went into sending down Winkowski. I don't think he's been very good, like, at all. I think he's been kind of horrible this year. Brian, what were your reaction? What was your reaction when you saw that Winkowski was the guy who got sent down?
I was kind of surprised, but from everything I've heard, it's that he's not buying into like the Bailey philosophy and kind of saying, I'm going to do it my way. I know what I'm doing. You know, I got to the majors this way. You know, you're the new guy. And he's like the only one saying that. So they're like, all right, you know, so I don't know if they're punishing him or whatever, or just results in general aren't working out, but he's going to have to figure it out. But I mean, I also kind of understand not everybody is going to throw a sweeper and breaking ball. Some guys don't pitch to that style. But he didn't agree with them from an organizational standpoint. And I don't know, maybe he's going to work on something when he goes to the minors or whatnot. But I mean, I think the major reason that he did leave is because of the results. And it is what it is. And like we talked about before, they kind of have a surplus of starting pitching kind of slowly getting healthy. And it's lowest common denominator. It's like you're not going to get rid of any of these, you know, bullpen pieces who can throw gas. You're going to throw the middle of the reliever kind of starter-ish dudes that can't really cut it at this level. I mean, he'll probably be back. I mean, he has a good track record of, like, being the man for a while. But right now, it's just not working out.
Yeah. Sam, what were your thoughts on Winkowski going down?
I was kind of surprised that it wasn't Kelly. I know that he's had his issues, that Winkowski's had his issues, but he feels like him and Kelly can serve a very similar role, and I think Winkowski can just do it more efficiently. I saw Cora said that he was going to start working like in longer relief, like try to go 4 or 5 innings. I what are we trying to do with him at this point? Because he's like 25, 26, something like that. I don't know what more value you're going to get out of him as a pitcher. I think that there's a lack of vision around him. Maybe it's because of the friction between him and like the coaching staff, but it's it needs to get resolved soon, or he needs to be out, because this is not working clearly.
Right. Yeah, it's so strange to me. Like if of all the people to riff with him, like why is it Winkowski? I'm sorry, all the people to riff with Andrew Bailey. Why is it Winkowski? Like, I know he's kind of got this attitude about him. Like, I remember in 2022 when he came up, he just shit on every opposing team, every opposing ballpark. Like, that was his thing, just being kind of a dick. But like in a funny way, like, oh my god, he thinks Wrigley sucks. Haha, that's so funny. He wasn't impressed with the Yankees lineup after giving up 6 runs and 3 homers. Wow, that's hilarious, you know. But now he's like, and last year he was really good in relief, and he was kind of their fire drill guy. A lot of jams, he would come in and he would pitch and escape a lot of them. And he had a really good year, sub-3 ERA last season. He wants to be a starter. And I think that's a big reason why he got sent down. Like, he didn't want to go back to the bullpen. And if there was a true rift between the two of them, I do feel like it has a little bit to do with him starting in spring training, going to the bullpen, even though he was the worst of the fringe guys in spring training. So naturally, hey, you can stay in the majors, but you're going to go in the bullpen where you had success. And then now went back to starting, was okay as an opener, going 3-4 innings, but wasn't anything special. And then now would have had to go back to the bullpen with all these guys coming back. So, I mean, I don't hate him as starter depth. I just, he doesn't really do it for me. I thought last year they really found a good role for him as like a multi-inning middle reliever. Starter goes 5, he can get you through the 7th because he's still stretched out and his stuff upticked in the bullpen. But now it's like you said, Sam, it feels like they're kind of toying with him a little bit. It's like, oh, you're a starter, you're a reliever, we're going to kind of keep you stretched out, but we really don't view you as a starter. We're just kind of trying to appease you into making you think we still view you as a starter. So I agree, it needs to be resolved quickly, or he needs to be traded. I think he's a guy that, you know, has some value. He'd be more of a throw-in in that capacity. Yeah. But like, if it came down to it between like keeping a guy on the 40 man or trading Winkowski, keeping another guy kind of in his mold on the 40 man or being Winkowski, I think I would probably pick the other guy. Guys like Winkowski are a dime a dozen, especially with, you know, the success the Red Sox have had with pitchers. They don't need him, plain and simple. Right. Mm-hmm. But no sense in just kicking him out the door, you know, in May. But
he's a cross control player, so the respect is very little, and that's the business of baseball. It's like, okay, whatever. You're not happy? Well, that's great. Like, what do you bring to the table? You know, you don't have a relative that owns the team. You know, you're not like, give me a reason to like be nice to you. Okay. Oh, results. Okay. Yeah, I'll keep you. I'll give you an extension, but. I did want to say though that I did look at his stats though, as far as like pitch usage, he is throwing the cutter 33% of the time, sinker 30% of the time. I mean, is he kind of buying into maybe the Bailey thing maybe? And it didn't look that way, I guess, but results are results. And that's why he's not where he is, you know? So
I do wonder what this new pitch is that they want him to learn. Like, that was part of it. Like, Cora said that they were sending him down to keep him stretched out as starter depth, and that they wanted him to possibly learn a new pitch. I don't know what that is. Is it the sweeper? Is he going to try and learn a splitter? You know, because the splitter really saved how.
Yeah, it's got to be the split, the sweeper, or the or a split finger or something, because he throws the cutter, a sinker, a slider, a changeup, and then he's only thrown his fast. He's, according to, you know, Baseball Savant, he's only thrown 8 four seamers all year. So,
and those were probably just sinkers that like were misfires, yeah. They just ruled them four seamers. Yeah, I do wonder what it'll end up being, because the splitter saved Houck as a starter, and the sweeper kind of saved Pivetta as a Red Sox. Like, he was not very good until he learned that, and then went into the bullpen and did that. But there was buy-in. Like, Nick Pivetta last year was adamant that he was a starter, but he took his lumps, went to the bullpen, got better, and became a starter again. Winkowski, for some reason, thinks he's a starter. But he has no like track record to be arrogant about it. Like, I remember, you know, 2016, Joe Kelly got sent down and they were like, you're going to be a reliever. You'll come back up when you start pitching well out of the bullpen. And he came back as a reliever and he was like, I still think I'm a starter, but I'm going to go and do my job. And he's turned into a very good pro. like a really good reliever. A lot of, like, he's made a decent amount of money, probably more than he should have with the White Sox, but like he's made a good amount of money in his career. Like Winkowski needs to have that similar buy-in. Like you can still feel like you're a starter all you want, but you know, be thankful for the fact you're on the major league roster. But we'll see. We'll see when he comes back, if he comes back, and how he comes back. You know, with that for Winkowski. But any last thoughts on the Red Sox before we move into MLB stuff at large? We'll talk a little bit about a Sox rival in a moment. Nothing left. All right. So yeah, Gerrit Cole has been throwing bullpens. You know, it's crazy to think how good the Yankees have been. How these like really solid their starting rotation has been this season, and Gerrit Cole hasn't obviously thrown a pitch for them. Didn't even participate in spring training because of the elbow issue that he had. He was hitting 89, reports said. He's throwing a lot of breaking stuff in this bullpen. A lot of people are reading very far into it. I don't really know how the progression should be looking at this point for a guy who had no spring training. Sam, what do you make of him throwing 89 miles an hour?
I really don't think anything of it. This is his first rehab, like, bullpen in months. If someone shows up to spring training throwing like 10 miles under, like, we have like the whole panic attack, like, oh my god, Kenley's throwing 85, and then he'll be okay. I think it's one of those things where it's just a massive overreaction.
Yeah, it's like February for him right now. Brian, what are your thoughts on Gerrit Cole?
Well, what I read was that it was his third rehab. It was his third bullpen session. And I figure by the third time, he should be at least cracked 90. He probably cracked 90 in high school. So for him to throw 89, I mean, don't get me wrong. They're probably tap him on the shoulder. Hey, give it 80%. Give him, you know. But, I mean, look at who Gerrit Cole is. He's not a guy who holds back. He's not a guy who's like, okay, well, I'll just take it. You know, I'll do it. When he threw 89, he probably like, oh, I probably threw a lot harder than that. Like, he threw 89. He's probably like, he probably had a question mark on his face. But, you know, hopefully, you know, for the Yankees fans, it's nothing. But I would think that at some point, if he comes back and, you know, a lot of these guys who don't have Tommy John surgery, but they have like a mild sprain and they come back and throw 92, 93, he's a very different pitcher if he's not throwing over 95, especially in today's game. And the Red Sox fan in me is like, well, good, fuck him, I don't care. But, you know, like the nice guy, the actual person, the dad I am, is like, well, I mean, you know, if Gerrit Cole ain't, you know, lighting up everybody else and then we get to kick his ass, like, it's not, you know, I want him to be dominant and then come into Fenway and then I'm up, you know, I want to put Kermit, you know, in the bullpen and I want him to turtle. But, like, I want him to, like, put up big numbers against the other scrubs, not us. So I'm kind of conflicted there. But, yeah, I mean, he's going to have to throw harder than that. And, you know, like Sam said, you know, it is early, so who knows. But is he ever going to be the same pitcher again before he gets – I think eventually he's going to have surgery. I think he might be able to get through the season, and then they're going to like, well, listen, you're not – you're throwing 91, 92, and or he's probably going to get swelling. Or I think he only threw, what, like 13 pitches or something crazy. It wasn't even a lot of pitches. So it's still way too early, but any pitcher over the age of, you know, what now, 26, you know, they're going to have at least one or two Tommy John surgeries. I was – not to get off topic, but – I was talking about was it Andrew McCutchen? I guess he faced the guy from the Pirates there, who was throwing over 100, and I guess he was also the leadoff hitter in a game that Strasburg pitched. Strasburg only pitched like 12 years, and when he was in college, he was throwing 102 at San Diego. So maybe people are finally going to get the thing that, you know, hey, listen, don't throw 100 miles an hour because your arm just ain't going to hack it anymore. You know, I don't know. I mean, I think that's what's going to happen next, but you know, baseball changes constantly and just constantly evolves. But this max velocity thing, it's crazy.
It's getting a lot of people hurt. I mean, also ultimately speaking, like I'm sure there's been plenty of pitchers over the years that, you know, their decline kind of happened rapidly because they had some of this elbow damage and Tommy John wasn't so popular in the sense of like it being like a, oh yeah, you get the surgery and you come back and you're fine. Like John Lackey, had to have Tommy John surgery in like 2004, 2005, you know, the same age, but at that point, at that stage, he probably would have come back throwing like 88, 89 miles an hour because he wouldn't have been able to trust it. He wouldn't have been able to, you know, return to the level that he got to in 13 and 14 between the Red Sox and the Cardinals. But now it's very different, and a lot of people seem to be okay with having a year off with the elbow surgery if it means that they're throwing 100 plus miles an hour. I mean, we'll talk about Paul Skeens in a minute, having his debut, how that went, which, by the way, was worse than Cooper Criswell. Just, again, wanted to reiterate that. But yeah, it's a lot less satisfying, you know, beating up on Garrett Cole if he's not Garrett Cole, you know, like. The whole thing that made it so hilarious that Devers just, you know, destroyed the man was this dude is the cream of the crop, like consensus top five starting pitcher in baseball. And the fact that Rafael Devers would like single-handedly ruin his Cy Young campaign every year, like that was so fun. And then obviously if he doesn't have the same stuff, it's not going to be as satisfying, but it'll also be much more frustrating when he inevitably shuts the Red Sox down for six innings like Patrick Corbin did the other day. So yeah, I don't make anything of it from a velocity standpoint at this point, because it's like I said, it's like it's February right now, or like maybe very early March. If he's like three or four rehab starts in and he's like barely cracking 90 miles an hour, I think I would be a little bit more concerned. Mm-hmm. But the Yankees are definitely babying him, and they should. I mean, they can survive the regular season without him, because they'll just face so many teams that can't outscore them. But you need him in October. If he doesn't come, if they baby him and he doesn't come back to like early August, mid August, and you know, but he's Garrett Cole, they are much likelier to win the World Series than they bring him back in, you know, late June, early July, and he's, you know, throwing 93, 94 and getting roughed up, because then that obviously negatively impacts your standing position. Yep. And maybe it's enough to, you know, cost you a playoff spot. But yeah, I'm not worried. Yeah, Aaron Boone finally loses his job. I think that man's got some of the most obscene job security dirt. Of all time.
He's got dirt. That's what he's got. He's got some pitchers or something.
He's got dirt on the Yankees organization. Although they won a ton with him. They just, you know, they're content with regular season success now. But yeah. So yeah, we just wanted to briefly touch on Garrett Cole, who's throwing 89. And then now we can talk about the dude who is pitching for Garrett Cole's old team, made his MLB debut on Saturday. He was pitching simultaneously to a guy with a mustache that was out pitching him, Cooper Criswell. Again, I can't stress that enough. Cooper Criswell was better. But Paul Skeens made his highly anticipated major league debut on Saturday against the Cubs. He went four, allowed two runs, had seven strikeouts. Plenty of fastballs exceeding the triple-digit plateau. A lot of people compared this to the Strasburg debut. I just straight up don't agree with it. I think the Strasburg debut was much more highly anticipated. But regardless, between Jared Jones and Paul Skeens, that rotation's starting to look pretty nasty out there in Pittsburgh. What do you think, Sam?
I agree. I think that they need offense so badly, though. Like, you can see some of the pieces coming together with Cruz, like the two pitchers you just mentioned, and with like Jack Swinski, some of the other, like Henry Davis. But oh my god, the depth there is just brutally bad. But to actually go back and combine the two things we were just talking about, Skeens like threw five out of the seven hardest fastballs in Pirates history since 2008, I believe. Like, and he's breaking Cole's numbers. So it's very funny that like it's kind of all in a weird way, like circular, I guess. Like, I it still kind of confuses me that Garrett Cole is on the Pirates, because like I just doesn't register in my brain. I wasn't paying attention to baseball back then. It was not like something I wasn't paying attention to the Pirates rotation in 2014. But just to see that was kind of like very interesting for me, at least.
Yeah, Skeens. Yeah, he was a menace. And yeah, thinking about Garrett Cole, like Garrett Cole started an opening day at Fenway Park as a member of the Pittsburgh Pirates in 2017. Andrew Benintendi had a home run off of him. Talking about things that are wild to think about, Benintendi homering is another one of those things. But yeah, just thinking about Skeens' debut, I watched about three innings of it. That dude is going to be a problem. Like, he's so nasty. And, like how do you hit? So, for starters, he throws 102. Like, that hard to hit. But he's got, like, he's got the Johan Duran splinker. He throws, like, 96 miles an hour. Like, good luck. And he does it for 5-6 innings. Like Duran, like you get lucky, you do it for an inning, or like you only have to face Duran for an inning. You're gonna have to do that for five, you're gonna face that for 5 or 6 innings with Skeens. And it's like now with all the epidemic of elbow injuries in baseball, like you're almost kind of, you know, subconsciously thinking about the possibility of that becoming a problem for him and him having to kind of dial it back a little bit. But you know, it's certainly an exciting time for Pirates fans getting to watch him and Jerry Jones develop. But I agree with you 100%, Sam. They need offense. Like Brian Hayes, I think, is a really good player. He doesn't really hit very well. Brian Reynolds is good, but he's already like 30 or getting close to that. So he's probably not going to be the Brian Reynolds of, you know, 4 or 5 years ago for much longer. And then like looking at the rest of the lineup, O'Neill Cruz looks like he's actually pretty good. I joked about how him and Franchi Cordero were very similar players after watching him hit against the Red Sox, but he looks pretty good. But I mean, like you got Michael A. Taylor out there because whatever. Andrew McCutchen back is a great story, but there's that. And then you got Yasmani Grandal has to play every day at catcher because Henry Davis, who you took first overall, isn't a good hitter like at all. And he's really not a catcher either, in my opinion. Like he looks more like an outfielder. Well, he's built like a first baseman DH, but he probably projects more as a corner outfielder than a catcher. But he's like, he can't hit. Like he doesn't look like a very good hitter right now. So we'll see. We'll see what happens there. But very exciting time for the Pirates. Yeah. Any last thoughts on Skeens?
Great to watch. But you know, like we'll see what happens. I think that, you know, I mean, I don't do it anymore because I don't have the time, but I'm sure a lot of people were all excited, you know, fantasy baseball, blah, blah, blah. And then the final statistics they were good. The velocity was the most exciting thing. And the results were kind of, I think those are going to come, but with his stuff, and like the splitter that he throws, it just, he's got all the right pitches and it's going to come together. It's just a matter of, does the body break down? If the body doesn't break down, if the mechanics are sound, he's going to have a nice long career. But he's their Binky. They're going to baby him. They're going to take care of him because he's going to, they haven't had a guy like him since Cole, period. Mm-hmm. And the Pirates have, I don't know if you've ever been there, Jordan. It's a beautiful stadium. It's like one of the best in the world. You know, the Pirates fans are great people. There's a lot to do around there. They just don't have the means to compete with these big markets. So when they get a guy like this, they need to do everything they can to keep him happy. And I mean, he's a cost control player now. That's not a problem. But if he's decent, can they get some other people? Can they get some other pieces? When the Pirates are a good team, and I know it's probably been, you know, 100 years since that's really happened, you know, I mean, they were good, like, back when the Braves were good in the 90s. That's the last time the Braves were, like, really good. Barry Bonds is on the team the last time they were really good. But if they ever do that again, it's good for baseball. You know, I get sick of the same teams being good every year. You know, I like a little parody. You know, the Pirates had, I think, a little run a couple years ago. But he's great to watch, and I just like the excitement of a young pitcher, you know.
Yeah, there was like a 4-year window where the Pirates were pretty good, where they were like churning out reclamation projects left and right with like Francisco Liriano, AJ Burnett. Russell Martin came over there and was awesome for them. But like that coincided with McCutchen being an MVP and Starlin Marte coming up. But they don't have that from a position player standpoint. They don't have that kind of depth. But from a rotation standpoint, I by the way, fully expecting Paul Skeens to have some sort of lucrative extension signed by the end of the winter. Like if he has like some sort of success, like I just, like you said, they're going to take care of him. And I think that they really want to be aggressive on that front. And I don't know how necessarily, you know, precedented it is to give a guy that kind of extension as a pitcher so soon, but with all the hype surrounding Skeens, I could totally see the Pirates doing that, especially because they're cheap and they know that if they don't have him beyond his arbitration years, that beautiful ballpark might get burned to the ground by their fan base. Because I remember a couple years ago, they were like losing their shit outside the ballpark and like not going to games because they felt ownership didn't have the best interest of the team and that market behind them in mind. But yeah. Last little thing on the major league at large stuff. Max Fried and the Braves took a no hitter into 2 outs into the 9th inning before old friend alert JD Martinez hit his first home run as a New York Met. Ultimately, the Braves ended up winning that. But it just, like, I don't want to drink the Kool-Aid enough to the point where I don't want Max Fried in Boston. But like, because that dude's fucking mean. Like, that dude is a baller. I love Max Fried. He has had his issues with injuries lately, but we were very close to the second no hitter of the year, but it would have been the first combined no hitter of the season, I believe. Right. You know, Ronel Blanco had his no hitter and then had like 6 2/3 of another one, which was also crazy to think about. Like in hindsight, like that dude, it's like a 30-year-old minor leaguer. Came up through a no-hitter and then almost threw another one. But I think Max Fried is an absolute animal. They're babying him because he's been hurt so much. But when that dude's rolling, the Braves are going to be a tough team to beat with him, Sale, if he's healthy. Obviously, they got Charlie Morton as well. And I'm blanking on somebody else. Strider, but he's out for the year. That's probably why I wasn't thinking of him. But, you know, moving forward, that team is going to be gross. I do wonder if they'll end up keeping Fried, though, because he is a free agent. And for some reason, he's like the only person immune from Alex Anthopoulos Island and signing those ridiculous extensions and giving money back to the Braves. But
how do you sign Sale to an extension but not sign Max Fried? Like, explain that one to me. How does that work?
Sadly, Fried probably wants what he's worth, so the Braves don't do that. I mean, like Ozzie Albies is making like $5 million a year, and he's been probably the best bang for your buck player in baseball, given the fact that he's making like $5 million a year to be a top 5 second baseman. But yeah, I don't know how you look at Sale's recent track record, and you're like, yeah, we can give him 3 more years, and then you're like, Max Fried is younger. Better,
yeah.
No, sorry.
Is weed legal in Georgia? Weed's not legal in Georgia, right? So there's no excuse, right?
There's no shot it's legal in Georgia. Yeah. I'm gonna just go on a limb there and say weed is not legal in Georgia, but yeah,
something's up there. I don't know. All right.
I mean, Max Fried, like again, the only person that wasn't invited there. Maybe he's just a dick. Like maybe they just hate him, but he's just really good. So they're like, we don't really want to keep you, but you know, for your contract, we'll keep you around, and you know, we'll let you pitch every fifth day, and we're gonna duct tape you to a pole like the Red Sox did to Pedro in the '90s, like in between starts, so you don't say or do anything. But yeah, maybe he's just a dick. Who knows?
He hangs out with Winkowski probably in between starts, I bet.
they're best friends.
They're BFFs. Yeah.
They're best friends. There's a burner
account somewhere. We'll get to trace it down.
Max Fried's texting Winkowski after every single outing. He's like, yo, I can't believe you're not in the rotation, bro. like, yeah. No, you don't need to learn the sweeper. You're great getting 3 whiffs an outing. You're great. You're awesome. Fantastic. Oh, yeah. Stupendous. Right. Fucking yeah. A. Yeah. Yeah. JD Martinez hitting his first home run with the Mets was pretty cool. We're finally at the point in the post JD Martinez era where I can just be happy for him that he's doing well somewhere else. I don't know what his numbers look like with the Mets, but he's latched on with the Mets after a lengthy offseason of waiting. And then after a good year last year, the Dodgers, where I had to hear it every single day until like July about how great JD Martinez was doing. But It's nice to see him kind of catch on somewhere else and, you know, have some success. Obviously hit a home run. It was a very JD Martinez-esque home run going the opposite way. And it also happened at a time where it was as low leverage as humanly possible, which reminds me so much of 2022 JD Martinez.
Jordan, was JD Martinez the same guy that hit the catcher?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. He broke his arm, right? Yeah,
he destroyed Wilson Contreras's arm. Like he absolutely. Yeah. I mean that's something we should probably hit on real quick before we wrap up. I saw the video and like I have other than like those compound fractures where the bone like literally comes out, I have never been more convinced watching a replay that like yep, that's broken than that swing. Like you could see it crumble, and like that, so scary. A lot of people blaming JD for that, and I'm just like. Mm-hmm. Wilson Contreras is in his back pocket. Like he's like JD's wearing him like a Snuggie. Like, I'm sorry that he wasn't able to avoid his arm. I don't know. Brian, what were your, I think the Cardinals are just stupid. I think that's what ended up happening. They told him to be right there and he ended up breaking his arm.
I mean, I understand what they were trying to do, but I think the glove was like at his belt buckle. I've never seen a catcher that close before. So if I was umpiring a game, I'd tap the kid on the shoulder, he'd get it back up. The umpire shouldn't have, don't get me wrong. I guess, maybe they kind of, Angel Hernandez wasn't the umpire that night, right? It wasn't something crazy where they missed something blatant, right? Okay.
No.
But even as an umpire, they're these guys all work together. They're all professionals. When he saw the glove go past his body, whoa, they would throw their hands up and the pitcher would step off. He was insanely close.
Yeah, it's crazy that he was so close. And like you said, the umpire should have caught it. But if it's definitely never going to be the fault of the hitter if his swing smokes you near the elbow. You're too close. That's not JD Martinez's fault. That's not the Mets' fault. They weren't saying, hey, go fucking ruin his season.
Right.
And take the man out. That's not what they were. That was not premeditated or anything like that. Sam, what were your thoughts on that?
Just really unfortunate, especially seeing him kind of do a little bit better than he did in his first year. I know we kind of run the same path with Yoshida, where it was he kind of had a rougher first year than some were hoping. And then trying just to get that comeback and get your value up a little bit, or get accustomed to the area, just to have it end in a similar way is just brutal. Hope he gets better soon.
Yeah, I'll quickly read Wilson Contreras' numbers. The Cardinals have not been very good this season. They've been very painfully mid. I've released my power rankings, I think, 4 or 5 times this season, and they have been the only team that hasn't moved, and they're 24th or 25th in my power rankings. But this is how Wilson Contreras has been doing so far. Slashing 280, 398, 551. WRC plus of 171. He's already at almost 2 wins above replacement. It's 6 home runs. He'd been awesome for them. That's a tough loss for them in a year that they already are fighting it in a shockingly good division this year. The NL Central is a wagon this year, and the Cardinals have just been that one team that really kind of is holding up the rear of it. But yeah, that's a tough blow for the Cardinals. And so I know how hard he worked. It was the most obvious pairing of last offseason. It was the second free agency hit. Yachty had retired already. And they were Wilson Contreras is going to be a Cardinal. And yeah, to see him have this kind of success, I know he idolizes Yachty Molina, have this kind of success, then end up destroying his arm, doing something that the Cardinals told him to do, get close to the hitter and steal that low strike. It's really unfortunate, and the Cardinals really did him dirty, and the umpire should have been there to help him out, because that there's no way that can happen. But it's not it's not JD's fault. It's not the Mets' fault. Really unfortunate situation. Any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Did you want to talk about the Burrows thing a little bit?
I don't know. I didn't watch him play. Obviously, did you get to watch him play at all? Really?
So he's about a year younger than me. And when we were kids, we all used to watch Little League World Series like it was the World Series every year. He was a man child, he was 6 feet tall and 180 pounds, but is 12-year-old. His dad played professional baseball. He won the MVP of the Little League World Series in 92. They won the title that year on a disqualification because every year they were playing against 18-year-olds, just didn't realize it until they got the visas later. But, he was also, he got picked in the first round of the draft. He won a gold medal in the Olympics. He was a complete stud. And, to die at 43 years old of cardiac arrest is just kind of really shocking. And, a lot of guys that I played baseball with as kids were like, oh, did you hear about Burrows? Because he was just, he was throwing 70 as a 12-year-old, which that's 100, basically. He was doing Tony Amonte stuff, but he was legit 12. He wasn't really 15 or 16 years old. So it was just the first guy I remember when, I was playing in Little League and he was the same age as me. And I'm like, that guy plays Little League. There's no way that person is the same age as me. And I think he won the MVP of the Little League World Series as well. And it just, for me, it was kind of it makes you feel, I feel old anyway, but when a guy dies, that was the same age as you basically, especially because of cardiac arrest, 43 is way too young to die of a heart attack anyway. But I just kind of feel really bad because it's kind of somebody we looked up to as kids when I started playing baseball. So,
yeah, for sure. And, you know, our heart goes out to the Burroughs family, all of his loved ones, friends, et cetera. You know, like you said, that's way too young to be dying of heart related stuff. And it sucks and it's brutal. And, you know, again, you know, rest in peace to Sean Burroughs, and who had, you know, a decent major league career as well. I know that that's kind of secondary to who he was as a person, but he had a really solid MLB career. Not a ton of major league burn, but a, you know, 278 career hitter. He was a solid ball player. But you know, obviously the person he is was trumps all of that regardless. And, you know, he will be missed. And again, our heart goes out to his family and his loved ones. So, anything else? All right. So thanks to everybody who dropped by and watched and commented, et cetera. You know, I know that it's, you know, the Bruins are playing right now. I see that they're down 3-2. I was able to keep myself composed as they slowly but surely, you know, self-imploded or self-destructed, I should say. And obviously it being Mother's Day, we, you know, happy Mother's Day again to all the mothers out there. Y'all should qualify for sainthood. Seriously, we don't deserve our mothers. Happy Mother's Day to my mom as well. I think she's standing out like near my room right now. So I'm not saying that just to appease her, obviously. But yeah, you know, happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there. And until next time, you know, for Sam and Brian, I'm Jordan. Peace out, everybody.